Thank you, Robbie Scott, for throwing Salvador Perez nothing but fastballs. Thank you. Good morning, Kansas City, and welcome to the Border Patrol.
Thank you, my friend.
That's right. That's right, Salvi. Welcome to the Border Patrol for this Thursday, June 22nd, 2017. I am Nate Bucati. Jake Gutierrez is running the show. How are you doing this morning, Big Jake?
Awesome. Awesome. Doing great.
We've got, we have a nickname for this intern yet?
No nickname.
Okay.
No nickname yet.
Marco, right?
Yep.
Marco, soon to be nicknamed something, the intern, is here. Stephen St. John is off today, as he has been telling you. Last night he was celebrating his wedding anniversary, and so he's scheduled an off day for today, and we have a busy day to get through with you here today. Your Kansas City Royals remain red hot. They win a series against the Boston Red Sox, who, if the season ended today, would be a playoff team. They're 8 games over .500. The Royals are 1 game away from being considered contenders by Jake Gutierrez, as they're now 35-36. Salvador Perez hit a salvadong, his first ever Grand Slam, which surprised the heck out of me.
Yeah, me too.
I was sure he'd hit a Grand Slam in his career.
I was trying to think, and I felt like that same way. Like, he's had to hit a Grand Slam before.
He's hit so many big hits,
right.
So many big home runs for this team. Surely he's had a Grand Slam
at some point. For sure shocked me, for sure. But, hey, what better time than yesterday?
That was a big one.
Yep.
Big salvadong. And we're going to talk a lot of baseball today. At 7:30, Buster Olney will join us to talk Royals and everything else across the landscape of baseball, as he declared the Royals in it last week. At 7:50, we'll get a weather forecast from Gary Lezak. At 8 o'clock, we're going to have Jarrett Sutton in studio, because tonight is the NBA draft. And there are some local kids that we expect to get drafted. Of course, Josh Jackson, also Frank Mason, maybe Wesley Awundu. So a lot of intrigue there. So we're going to talk a lot about the NBA draft with Jarrett Sutton in the 8 o'clock hour. And we might have a special guest at 8:45 we are working on. We will let you know if and when that comes together. Then in the 9 o'clock hour, Rustin Dodd in studio for the whole hour. The man who covers the Kansas City Royals like no one else on a daily basis, Rustin Dodd, to talk Royals at 9 o'clock. So that's what's coming up on the show. And this was another one of those wins that reminded you of the American League champion Royals in 2014-2015.
Exactly. And that's the first time yesterday I'm sitting there, I'm like, you know, they pull this off. This is starting to feel like one of those teams, the teams that wouldn't die, just wouldn't go away. Those teams in 14 and 15 that they just always had life. You always like, okay, they might do it. I haven't felt like that about this team all year until yesterday. I was like, wow, that felt, for the first time, that felt like one of those old teams, one of those AL champion teams. And it's a new feeling for me looking at this team and having that feeling.
So, I'm glad to hear you say that, Jake. I will go back to June 6th. You and I were doing the show together. Steven was on vacation that week. And it was June 7th when we were actually talking about this. But the night of June 6th, the Royals came from behind. They were down 7-3 to the Houston Astros, and they came all the way back. And Mike Moustakas hit a walk-off home run in the ninth inning, after the Royals put up four runs in the eighth, and then won the game with the 2-run homer by Mike Moustakas in the ninth. And that's what I said then. I said that, at least for a night, that made me feel like the old Royals. You know, like, man, that's how it used to be. Like, just a couple years ago, this Royals team, they're still a little bit in there. And at the time, I know you were still like, look, they're 7 games under .500. It doesn't feel like it at all, and this just prolongs the inevitable. I think was kind of your stance at that time was, this is just going to push off the team selling their pieces off because people are going to mistakenly believe that they're capable of going on another run. It's interesting now that we have the perspective of another month of baseball since then, or really just a couple of weeks of baseball since then, to see that maybe that wasn't so mistaken after all. Now, look, there's still a long, long way to go in this season. Right now, the Royals are as hot as just about any team in baseball. And unfortunately for them, in terms of trying to creep up the standings, so are the Indians. So the Royals really haven't gained any ground in the past week on the Cleveland Indians. They're still 3.5 games back. The Indians got another win over the Orioles last night. And they haven't gained any ground in the wild card either. They're 2 games back for the last wild card spot. A couple of days ago, they were just 1 game back, actually. And that is one of the things to keep in mind when we talk about how tight this race is that other teams, you know, can get hot as well. And there's a lot of teams. Like right now, 5 teams the Royals would have to pass to get that last wild card spot. Okay? So that means that's that many more teams that could also get really hot and keep you at arm's length. Now, 2 games, though, is not much at all. And with this much time to go in the season, the Royals are in it. The Royals are in both the division race and the wild card race right now, and they're beating even good baseball teams now because they took a series off the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, who are tied with the Royals in the standings right now, so that means they're a decent team, right around 500. And now they've taken a series off the Boston Red Sox, who are a team that are 8 games over 500, and as we said, in the playoffs. So they're playing good baseball, and they're showing those things, like Jake just said, where you go, yeah, that's the Royals that never give up. That's the Royals that never quit, and they do special things. Now, I will say this as well, and look, this is no slight to the Royals here, because you have to take advantage of it, and you have to have a guy that's good enough to hit that home run when the opportunity presents itself. But boy, the Red Sox got to be livid with themselves. I mean, they just handed the Kansas City Royals that game yesterday. They've got a 4-2 lead going into the 8th inning. They've got their closer waiting. All they got to do is bridge the gap to their closer. They bring in Matt Barnes, who on the year looks like a pretty good pitcher. You look at it, he's got an ERA below 4, which isn't great. This is even after yesterday. He's got an ERA below 4, which isn't great for a reliever, but it's also not horrible. But the numbers, and I don't know, have you seen the numbers on him for home versus road, Jake?
I have not seen that split.
This is unbelievable stuff. This is the guy that to me lost the game for the Red Sox. You come in the 9th, in the 8th inning, and you walk the first 2 guys you face. That's just right there. And now that the fans are getting back into it, you know, now that the fans are starting to believe again here in Kansas City, you know, this Kauffman Stadium becomes that special place again where all of a sudden, you know, in the 8th inning, everybody starts to go crazy when you put a couple guys on base. Listen to these home road splits for Matt Barnes. You think the Red Sox might be looking for a guy that can help them bridge the 8th inning? They can't trust this guy on the road. At home, he's got an ERA of 0.56. 0.56 when he pitches at Fenway Park. Opponents are hitting 196 against him. He's got a strikeout to walk ratio at home of 22-6. On the road, he's got an ERA of 7.47. Think about that.
That's Chris Young-esque.
0.56 at home, 7.47 on the road.
That's insane, man.
And he's walked 10 batters in 15 2/3 on the road. He struck out 17. Opponents are hitting 250 against him as opposed to 196 at home.
I don't know how you can explain that.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And when I saw those numbers as he came in, you know, maybe the Royals can do something to this guy. Comes in, he walks 2 people. So then the manager has to bail him out of the game. And so he brings in Robbie Scott. Robbie Scott immediately proves that he cannot find the strike zone whatsoever. I mean, right off the bat, he gives up an infield single. I'm sorry, not an infield single. I'm looking at the wrong part of the game. Right off the bat, he walks Eric Hosmer. And not one of the pitches was close. I mean, not one of them. So now you're, base is loaded. Tying run at second base. Here come the Royals. And then up comes Salvador Perez. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, these two Red Sox relievers that have just pitched have basically walked the bases loaded. Not basically, they have. They've walked the bases loaded. You got to make this guy throw a couple of strikes. You know, I mean, like this is the type of deal where this guy's, he's come into the game. He's freaked out. He can't throw any strikes. He walks Hosmer. Not a pitch as close. But we also know Salvador Perez does not walk. And he swings the bat. And I was thinking, this could be a problem. Because about the only thing that really could hurt the Royals here is a strikeout. And this guy can't throw strikes. And we know Salvi kind of swings at everything.
Well, I was like, please don't hit into a double play.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been a problem too. Salvi swings at everything. I think it was 9 fastballs he saw. All fastballs. All of them. And he's got 2 strikes on him. I don't know how many of them were in the strike zone. Not many. And you're thinking, this guy is just going to put him away. He's going to throw a breaking ball that's in the dirt. Salvi's going to swing at it. And it's going to be on to Mike Moustakas to try to play hero. Darn if he doesn't leave a fastball out over the plate. A little inside, maybe. And Salvador Perez turns on it and crushes it for a grand slam. And the Royals win the game. And even Salvador Perez said after the game, thank you for throwing me fastballs. Thank you. So, I mean, the Red Sox, they've got to be just absolutely kicking themselves on the way out of town. How did we take a 2-run lead in the 8th inning with our really good closer waiting in the wings and walk the bases loaded? And then, to the one guy who won't draw a walk, throw him a cookie. Like, how did we do that? But they did. And the Royals made him pay. And credit to all of the Royals hitters who took the walks. It started with J-Bone. J-Bone, Jorge Bonifacio got the walk. Then Kane got the walk. Hosmer takes the walk. And that's what set it all in motion. And Salvador Perez is the hero on the day. And the Kansas City Royals are 1 game under 500 with the Blue Jays coming to town. They got an off day today to relax and recover and enjoy the fact that they are back in this thing. And they're playing good baseball right now, really good baseball. Really, ever since the early part of May, they've been one of the best teams in baseball. They have. And away we go. We will take a break. We'll hear from some of the participants when we come back. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB, and you're watching on 38th The Spot. Marco, the intern, just came in and handed me a sound sheet and informed me that his friends call him Taquito.
Automatically, it's dismissed.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Marco understands how this works.
I care what his friends call him.
Right. You don't get to pick your intern nickname.
Good try, pal.
In fact, it works the exact opposite of that.
Right. Right.
I don't know if that gives us a jumping off point to somehow name him something very different from Taquito.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what the opposite of a taquito is.
Flatbread wrap.
Right.
Panini.
Spaghetti head.
What is the opposite of a taquito?
I don't know, man. It's a good question.
Sushi?
Maybe.
Sushi the intern? I don't know.
We'll find something fitting.
We'll have to think about that.
We'll know when it happens. Taquito, yeah, right.
Yeah, no way. Not ever. Not ever. By the way, did you see that the New York Mets are now lecturing Yasiel Puig on Cadillacing his game-winning walk-off home run too much the other day? Oh, it wasn't a game winner. It wasn't a walk-off home run. It was fourth inning.
Didn't see that.
I just love it. After the game, he doesn't understand what respect for the game is what they said.
And you totally agree with that, right?
No. Dodgers have won six straight. The Mets are playing horrible. And so they're going to take it out. They're going to, you know, turn their ire to the guy that's hitting home runs off of him instead of focusing on not giving up the home runs. I just love the concept. Respect the game. Respect the game. It is a game. It's a game. This isn't heart surgery, you know? It's a game. Like, respect the game. You're playing a kid's game. So make sure you respect it. Don't enjoy it. Don't you enjoy that game? Don't you enjoy that home run you hit? That is disrespectful.
Mike Boddicker would agree.
It's like going to church. You don't enjoy church, you suffer through church.
Hey, man, I don't agree with showing up, guys. So if he's showing up the other team, there is a level of that. I haven't seen the home run. I haven't seen the trot, so I can't really make my own judgment. But I think there is a point where when you are disrespecting an opponent, I think that I don't care about whatever the game, but when you have to have a level of respect for the guy who's standing on the other side of the diamond from you, or field, or whatever, court. I mean, that's part of the sport. So, I mean, it's fourth inning. You know, Puig's a pretty polarizing guy. So, you know, it's probably easy to try to lecture him. I just don't, they take themselves a little too serious.
I mean, I'm watching it. He hits the ball. He stares at it. He kind of grabs his belt buckle and kind of straightens it up a little bit. He walks about halfway down the first baseline, and then he breaks into his trot. By the time he gets to first base, the first baseman's yelling at him, so he turns around and yells back at him. By the time he gets home, the catcher's yelling at him, so he says something to him. How is that, like, the world of baseball. I mean, again, if you're staring at the pitcher, if you're taunting the pitcher, if you're pointing at him and saying, like, hey, in your face, pal, something like that, okay. It just cracks me up, man. Respect the game. Don't you celebrate a touchdown. How disrespectful is Travis Kelce every time he goes into the end zone and celebrates a touchdown? I mean, that's disrespectful to all the guys on the other team.
Gronk's the worst. I mean, he's the most disrespectful guy. You can see how much he celebrates when he scores?
I don't know what you're saying. I don't get it.
I'm joking.
Does he celebrate a lot?
You ever see a Gronk? His spikes?
Know. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, okay. Every week, every time, you know, you go to Barstool Sports and they have the Gronk spikes.
Okay. Disrespectful.
Yes, horribly disrespectful.
Doesn't respect
to the game.
Doesn't respect his opponents.
I mean, it's just disrespectful.
You're not supposed to have fun when you play sports and have success. You're supposed to somberly put your head down and act like you're sad to be there and, you know, and don't enjoy it. So, you know, it's just like these Royals, you know, this damn Salvador Perez dumping water on people, you know, it's really going to rub people the wrong way. It's just can't do it, you know. So, like you said, Yasiel Puig, he's a polarizing figure. So, he makes people mad, you know, I understand that. But, you know, you're the Mets, man. You're 9 games under .500. Go play some good baseball. Stop telling other people, like, stop finger wagging other people and telling them how to act. And, you know, I don't know. I get so annoyed by the piety of it, you know. Let's not make sure we don't enjoy this. Let's make sure that this grind of a sport is every bit the grind that we make it out to be. Let's make sure that it's just we have to slog through this depressing long season and, you know, and that we don't enjoy the good parts. Let's make sure of that, okay? Speaking of the good parts, that's one of the things I love about this Royals team, by the way. They enjoy victories. They celebrate the hell out of every win. And some people are like, hey, act like you've been there. You know what? How about have some fun? Because you actually lose a whole lot of games in baseball even when you're good, too. You lose, like, even the best teams, like, 60 times a year they got to suffer a loss. So when you might as well celebrate every single win as much as you possibly can. And that's what the Royals did last night. Here's Ned Yost after the game on that eighth inning comeback that was culminating in the Salvador Perez Grand Slam.
It felt good. I mean, the inning felt good. You know, you start the inning, your mindset as a manager is we need somebody to get on base. And then once we get on base, that brings the tying run up. So you're thinking, okay, at least we got the tying run up. You know, Lowe has a great at-bat with a walk, and here comes Haas, and, you know, they bring the lefty in. He has a great at-bat with a walk, and, you know, love the matchup with Salvi, you know, because he has the capability of doing exactly what he does, what he did, you know, just driving a pitch into the seats, and when he did it, it was pretty exciting.
Mike Swanson of the Kansas City Royals would correct Ned Yost that it was not a great at-bat by Eric Hosmer. It was a great plate appearance because technically it wasn't an at-bat because he walked. Not that anybody cares about that, but I'm just saying. Hashtag just saying. Here's more from Ned Yost on the big home run by Salvador Perez. The Salvadong.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the second strike was a ball that he swung at. But you know what he did? He reeled himself back in from that point. And, you know, took probably the next two pitches were the same pitch that he swung at before. And then, you know, when he got to 3-2, he went into battle mode at that point, just kept fouling off some tough pitches until he finally got a hold of one.
So the Royals won a series against the Boston Red Sox. You know, look, we've put a lot of qualifiers out there as this Royals team has started to heat up. Okay, they took advantage of a couple of really bad teams in San Diego and San Francisco. Maybe two of the three worst teams in all of baseball. That's fine. But now they're going to go to Anaheim and play a decent team. How will they do there? Okay, they took 3 out of 4 from the Angels, but you know what? The Angels don't have Mike Trout. They're not a great team right now. Now you got teams from the American League East coming to town. And everybody in the American League East is playing like right around 500 or better. How are you going to do when you take on the Red Sox, who are right there with the New York Yankees in terms of second best record in the American League? And the Royals have now taken 2 out of 3 from the Boston Red Sox. And to be fair, the game yesterday is one of those games that probably could have gone either way, and they were down by 2 runs in the eighth inning. But when we talk about bullpen struggles, the Red Sox got an issue on their hands, man. They got an eighth inning guy that can't get anybody out when he's wearing a gray uniform. What's the deal? I don't get that. I mean, to repeat, Matt Barnes, a 0.56 ERA at home, a 7.47 ERA on the road. Like you said, that's Chris Young territory. It makes no sense how you could be that different from home and road as a pitcher. Particularly considering that Fenway is not exactly a pitcher's ballpark. So they've got issues. They're not a perfect team. And that's what we keep talking about. I mean, look, the Astros are going to run away with everything in the American League. That seems pretty clear. But outside of that, you're looking at a lot of teams that have flaws right now. The Red Sox certainly have flaws. That's why they want to trade for some of Kansas City's players so badly. The problem they have right now is that the Kansas City Royals are in the playoff race. They're 3.5 games out in the Central, and they're 2 games out of that second wild card spot. When it comes to winning that series against the Red Sox, here are the thoughts from Ned Yost.
Yeah, this is huge, you know, coming in here and playing a great team like Boston and winning the series, especially after not really playing well last night, coming in, you know, in a rubber match of a 3-game series and battling and looking like, you know, you're outs away from losing a series to keeping the fight up until you can put the runs on and eventually win the series.
Royals win it with a grand slam by Salvador Perez, which is just awesome to see. We love Salvi, and he did it with Miguel Cabrera's bat, which is kind of cool. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Well, just yesterday, Stephen St. John said that he would possibly have a nervous breakdown if we ever have to say goodbye to Salvador Perez. We're preparing ourselves mentally for the fact that we're going to have to say goodbye to a lot of our favorite Royals probably after this season's over. I guess it's still possible if somehow the team tanks over the next month that some guys get traded between now and then, but most likely it looks like it's going to be after the season's over. But Salvador Perez is going to be here for a while, at least according to his contract, which makes us all very happy. And after the game last night, he spoke at the podium as he hit his first ever grand slam, and he did it with Miguel Cabrera's bat.
I was excited, you know, first thing, we got the lead. So, really good feeling. Give you opportunity to Kelvin Herrera to save the game and win the W for us.
So you foul off a couple, you kind of reach for your side. How much are you thinking about the discomfort there, but then the opportunity with the bases loaded?
I don't have anything in my just sort of little pain sometimes when I miss a ball, when I hit it. So I don't try to think about too much, you know. Just try to be concentration and swing a good pitch.
Sal, and what you were thinking and trying to stay alive in that
at bat? He threw a 4 straight ball to Hoss. So I don't, in my mentality, I was not like take a first pitch or wait for a pitch or wait for a strike, make him be back to, you know, to the home plate or whatever. No. A situation like that, maybe throw one pitch, you know, for a strike. So I just try to see a good pitch. I like to throw a lot of fastball to right and it was a great bat, and he missed the last pitch. Possible go in, leave it in the middle, and make it pretty cool.
That was the most hittable pitch of the whole sequence, wasn't it? The last one?
Yeah. The couple pitches before that one, he just keep throwing in the corner, you know? Right. And when they made some pitches, hard to hit it.
So did you know right away that was your first major league grand slams?
Yeah, I would think about it. Two pitches before. Seriously, I swear to God, it's unbelievable. I don't know why it's coming to my mind. Two pitches before.
You felt what? I've never hit a grand slam.
I never hit a grand slam. That's why I said, thank God. It's unbelievable, huh? I should be thinking like that.
You asked for a 10-game winning streak. And get, you know.
Can you talk about the adjustments you made throughout that at-bat?
My adjustment? I don't make adjustments. I just see the ball and hit it.
But there were a couple pitches outside you. Early, and
because I see the ball way outside. If I see it close, I'm a swinger. You guys know me. I like to swing. I got 10 walking, 250 out back.
So you were holding up the bat in the dugout. Is that where did you get that bat?
Miggy gave that bat to Butera when Detroit playing here. So today, the day Miggy gave it to him, I asked him for the bat because Drew he don't gonna use. It's a little heavy for him. I don't say you with, but and today, as soon as I come into the clubhouse, you just put in my lock. Like I use it today, and I use it. I like the bat. So.
The first time you used it.
Yeah, today. And I think I'm gonna use it on Friday too. What do you guys think?
Three hits are out of it.
You don't want to break that one.
No, I don't want to break that one. I was gonna call Meg and send me. Hey, you gotta send me some more bats, please.
You're going there Tuesday.
I'm kidding, too long.
Salvi, you said that two pitches before you knew that you've never hit one before. But did you know that you could hit one this time? Did you have the confidence or feeling?
We always have the opportunity to do it. I don't think it's easy to think I'm gonna do it. You know, it's a little hard. But I got the opportunity today and I did it, so I can say I got one grand slam.
I'll just to clarify what you stepped out of the box after a foul ball and thought, oh, I never hit a grand slam?
No, it's coming to my mind. It's a great opportunity to be one of these guys, too. So Listening for like 5 seconds. I don't try to do it. I swear to God, I don't try to do it.
What was the last one you had?
Grand Slam?
Yeah, I did.
I never hit him today. No, never.
In the minors or something?
Ah, in minors? Yeah. I got two. One in double A and one in triple A. The natural, yeah. Arkansas.
After he kept throwing your fastball after fastball, did you feel like your timing was getting better?
I get surprised. I don't know why he isn't throwing me some slide and the whole bat. He just threw me fastball. I think it was like 9-10 fast in the row. So, it's a great pitcher too. He threw a couple to Hosmer, so because it was a way to home, they maybe think he can hit me when the slider, so he just want to throw fast. I don't know. Thank you for throwing me fast.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you for throwing me fastballs. I mean, you got to love Salvador Perez. You got to love this guy. First of all, Robbie Scott, what are you thinking?
Thank you, my friend.
I mean, there's no secret. He just said, look, yeah, I know Eric Hosmer just got walked by this guy where he couldn't even find the plate, but I know he throws fastballs to righties, and I don't walk. He's like, you guys know me. And he knew his numbers. He's like, I've got 10 walks and 240 at-bats. I don't walk. I'm looking for one pitch. I think he might throw me one strike, and I'm going to hit it. And look, that approach will drive a lot of baseball people crazy, right? There's a lot of guys that would say, make this guy throw a strike. He can't find the plate. They've walked the bases loaded. Don't get yourself out by swinging at a pitch out of the strike zone. And of course, Salvi swung it. I don't know how many pitches he swung at outside the strike zone. 6? Foul him off. And finally, he gets one that is right at the top quadrant of the strike zone in the middle. I mean, that in the wheelhouse, he got the pitch. He said, I don't know why he didn't throw me a slider. I figured he'd throw me a slider at some point. Never did. But you just got to love Salvador Perez. He said about 2 pitches before the home run, he thought to himself, you know, I've never hit a grand slam.
It's so believable, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
well, and then, you know, like the fact that he knows his numbers right off the bat. Yeah, I got 10 walks and 200. And I looked it up. Oh, yeah, by the way, 10 walks, 240 at bats.
Right.
Bam, right on the money. And then it's like, well, did you ever hit a grand slam before? Yeah, I hit one in double A and one in triple A. Like, he knows, like, where he was, when he hit him. and he's like, yeah, hey, you know, this would be a good time. I've never hit a grand slam before.
Yeah, why not now? Why not now?
So he did. He's Salvi.
Love that guy.
I still can't believe that that's his first grand slam in the major leagues. I was stunned when I heard that yesterday.
Oh, yeah, they flashed that up right after he crossed home plate. Like, that can't be right.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
No, he's hit so many big home runs for this team, so many big hits.
Salvi, man, he's the anchor of this team.
So he goes 3-for-3 the first day he uses Miguel Cabrera's bat. Tributera. I mean, if we believe all this stuff, Drew Butera walked over and said, here, use this bat today.
It's left in his locker.
Okay.
this is the one you're using today, huh? All right. Yeah, by the way, they're going to Detroit. Pick up a couple extra.
Well, and did you see what Drew Butera is, how he described the bat? And we'll have to get to the bottom of it with Rustin Dodd. Drew Butera said, I've always said some guys just have magic sticks. I've got the magic stick. I know if I can hit once. Miggy's got the magic stick. He gave a couple to Drew Butera. And Salvi's got a magic stick, and he's got a Salvadong. And the Royals got to win. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. This exclusive stick I don't share with the world. I had y'all up early in the morning. Drop it a low, can't stop us. Been a fiend for this, it's rock.
Thank you, my friend. Hits,
get the position down back, then it's time to switch. I rock the boat, I work the middle. I speed it up, straight it up.
And I ain't in the hood with my sound loop. I'm in the telly working up a switch. Tonight's the night. You can fall in love. You can call your mama right now. Tell her you met it.
Best album in Rolling Stone's history. Thank you very much, Jake Gutierrez. Exile on Main Street. Kids, if you don't know it, now you know. Go listen to that album just all the way through, and you're welcome. Do it after the show's over, though. We got three more hours to go here, kids. During a meet-and-greet event for the Kansas football team on Wednesday, KU Athletics Director Cheyenne Zenger delivered news that the renovation of Memorial Stadium and other football-related projects totaling around $300 million are around the corner. I'm reading from KUSports.com. Quote, I'm going to say this quick and be done with it. In 3 weeks, we will have the renderings for a new stadium, end quote, Zenger said. Zenger went on to say, quote, the numbers will approach around $300 million. Now, the article starts off by saying renovation of Memorial Stadium, but Zenger says we will have the renderings for a new stadium. So I don't know what that means. Are they going to tear the thing down and build from the ground up? Are they going to renovate it? I don't know. Does renovating it, I guess, could mean a new stadium as well. I don't know what all you get for $300 million these days. Seems like the price on these things just continues to go through the roof. They're talking about an indoor practice facility as well. Shane Zenger said, quote, the stuff we're going to do first, like I talked about, things that we should have had 10 years ago. At the top of the list is an indoor facility. So as we begin the new stadium, we're going to start with an indoor facility. We're going to do things that will help young guys on the field. So we'll see. No doubt about it, the facilities for the University of Kansas football are woefully behind what they are at other places. But I always find it interesting, and I don't know what this means, but what was the best run of KU football in our lifetime, Jake?
That would probably be the 07 into 08, with the first time ever in school's history that they won back-to-back bowls.
That they even went to back-to-back bowls. And they did win them.
It was the Orange Bowl and then the Insight Bowl, where they beat Virginia Tech in the Orange Bowl, and then they beat Minnesota and Eric Decker.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Right. So is that 07, then 08?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That would have to be. If it's the first time in the program's history you went to two bowls in a row. I mean, you look back to Glenn Mason's era. Yeah. A really good era.
So,
in our lifetime.
On both counts, when that Kansas football team went to the Orange Bowl, went to the Inside Bowl, the football complex, practice field and everything was over by Allen Fieldhouse. Mark Mangino fought like crazy to get a football-specific facility over by the stadium built, which they did, and the team has been rotten ever since. They raised the Anderson Football Complex. Was this great state-of-the-art place. You know, people from big power schools were coming to look at it and everything, and they have been terrible ever since. I don't know what it means. But Mark Mangino's teams had to bus across campus to go practice on the stadium field. And ever since they built that shiny, fancy stadium, they've been terrible. Hopefully this is a sign that things are getting better at the University of Kansas. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk with Buster Olney at 7:30, Gary Lezak with the weather forecast around 7:50, Jarrett Sutton to talk NBA draft, which is tonight in the 8 o'clock hour, then Rustin Dodd the entire 9 o'clock hour. Thanks for watching on 38 The Spot. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Keep listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.